It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this first day of September, 2022. This is the Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Yes. And in point of fact, if you go there right now, right this very minute, you will be greeted by the early arrivers to the aforesaid chat room. That being Theo. Hey, Theo. Hey, Squeaky. Hey, Roger in Oregon. Hey, New Jersey Nick. Glad y'all could join us for the evening. It's awfully nice to see you all. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage skilled navigator, still nonetheless chose not to fold space and become man cave, because who wants to fold space into the heart of the sun, right? Yeah. So, hi, I'm Robin. If you pop by, I think we're going to have a dandy good discussion this evening, even if I have to fill a lobster for 3 hours. That's fine, too. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence of that, we say thank you to our, what the heck's going on here? I'm sorry, I'm trying to do our thank yous, and I'm being told that, well, dadgummit, I hate it when it plays out this way. Are we streaming? We appear to be streaming. Then why is, Alright, bear with me. Okay, I'm good there. And we'll just, There, now. Thank you so much to Mark and to Chris. Thank you so much to Tom and Sunny San Rafael. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you to Joseph. Thanks so much for being partial sponsors of the program. And hey, Max, thanks so much, Max. Max took us down to, on our fundraising goal, Max took us down today, this being Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Well, we entered the program at $650. To go to catch up with August. Max has gotten us down to $450 by jumping in on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. So that means two out of $300 have been met. Thank you so much, Max. And, how's that calculation? Anyway, we can get down to only $50 to go in August, and then the $300 for today, with just another $100 in, okay? So, thank you. Thank you, Max, so very much. And thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon, PayPal, a la carte, however it is, because you keep this program going, and you have for so many years, and it is so, so very inspiring. So I guess about 8 p.m., well, it's a momentous evening, and I'm sort of torn. At 7 p.m. this evening, Eastern Daylight Time, the 100th and whatever renewal of the Backyard Brawl will start in Pittsburgh. That's Pitt versus WVU. It's the one day of the year I don't like Pittsburgh because I'm required to as a proud daughter of Harvard on the Mon. But then at 8 p.m., something far more significant comes along. Speaking from Independence National Historical Park in Philadelphia, President Biden is going to give an address and discuss what he calls and has called over the course of the last few years a battle for the soul of the nation. Namely, he's going to talk about the rise of MAGA fascism. A senior administration official said on a call today that in Philly this evening, he will talk about the direct threats to democracy from MAGA Republicans and the extremism that is a threat right now to our democratic values. And quoting from the prepared remarks, he will decry, quote, a movement that does not recognize free and fair elections, a movement that increasingly is talking about violence in response to actions they don't like or don't agree with, which is not the way but democracies behave. It's not a speech about a particular politician or even about a particular political party. Now, I don't know why, House Minority Leader Kevers McCarthy, about as unserious a politician as has ever been minority leader, he's going to offer a prebuttal. He's going to go to Scranton, Pennsylvania. It's over the ocean to Scranton, Pennsylvania? Never mind. He's going to go to Scranton and claim that President Biden is assaulting the soul of the nation. Even though Kevers McCarthy on January 6, 2021, was shitting his pants and screaming at Nitwit Nero to call off his insurrectionist terrorist dogs. This is not going to be a campaign event because, frankly, President Biden's campaign is not yet announced. No, this is an official White House event. This is an address to the nation trying to ring the alarm bell for what is being done to our often more aspirational and inspirational attempt at democracy. So that will begin immediately after this program ends. And I guess we'll be talking about it on Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And I think I'm probably echoing the sentiments of the vast majority of the Horn Community Congregation in saying that I am glad he is dealing with this directly. It seems kind of snarky to say it's about damn time, but we have been out in front of this for a very long time. You know, as far back, long before Charlottesville, Virginia, we've been talking about the fascist tendencies of the Republican Party, which are now in full flower. And I got a feeling there's going to be some serious butthurt by tomorrow morning. The Cuckoo Bananas Caucus will be shrieking from the rooftops, you know, your marginal trailer queens and Clanny Oakleys. I love the name that Tara gives to Clanny Oakley. Banned from the bowling alley Bobert. That's just beautiful. Because her hubby couldn't keep his junk in his Jodhpurs. So that's going to be, I suspect it's going to be a big deal. And there was some breaking news just a moment ago. Oh, dear God. A federal judge, a maggot judge, of course, has signaled that she's open to Nitwit Nero's request to appoint a special master to review the documents seized from Mar-a-Lago that she may not even have the clearance to view. She said she's going to unseal a more detailed inventory of the materials seized in the search of Merida Lardass. Oh, thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you for letting me know. Apparently it was a thing with, I don't know, my cell phone or something. Matt in San Francisco says, hell, we've been talking about Republican fascists since George W. Bush. You're not wrong, because we've been watching the rise of it. You know, Nixon had fascist tendencies. God knows, Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, that greasy-headed B-movie actor who got upstaged routinely by a chimp, the malcontents and ne'er-do-wells and hard cases and dead-enders with whom he surrounded himself. If Ollie North didn't have fascist leanings, then, you know, I'm the reincarnated 32nd Emperor of Babylon. Oh, wait a minute. I got a cowbell in the chat room there. That's for you, New Jersey Nick. He already has a special master. His name is Putin. Oh, that was quality. I wonder what the special... What is this idiot trying... Never mind. But there's other stuff out there for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. We need to look up the name of another federal judge. This being Benjamin Joel Beaton, ruled in a case today. He's a U.S. District Judge for the Western District of Kentucky. He sits in Louisville. He was, of course, appointed by Nitwit Nero in December. He assumed his seat on the bench in December 1st of 2020. So he's just short of 2 years as a federal judge. He doesn't look like he's quite old enough to shave yet. And he... he was confirmed by the Senate by a vote of 52-44. Well, and he's made some history for himself as an enemy of freedom. And he did so in classic maggot fashion, because once again, the Alliance Defending Freedom dragged a $100 bill down some old dirt road in Kentucky and found an asshole with a camera who challenged a Louisville city ordinance that said businesses in Louisville cannot discriminate against gay people. Here we go again. Cupcakes, pizzas, photographers, wedding cakes. According to the Louisville Courier-Journal, one Chelsea Nelson sought an injunction against the city ordinance and claimed her closely held religious beliefs would be violated by saying that, that she couldn't discriminate against gays. And that Louisville couldn't use the law to otherwise express messages inconsistent with her beliefs. This shit drives me bananas. All she had to do was maybe put up on her website, "I despise gay people." And then gay people would not have gone to her for their for their wedding photos. You know, that I'm sure she would have snapped with a, I don't know, a disposable Kodak 110 cat. Jesus Christ. The Alliance Defending Freedom and their pettifogger, Brian Neihardt, issued a statement yesterday. "We're pleased with the court. We're pleased the court agreed that the city violated Chelsea's First Amendment rights. The court's decision sends a clear and necessary message to every Kentuckian and American that each of us is free to speak and work according to our deeply held beliefs."
I can't sort this shit out for the life of me, because what happens when Chelsea Nelson decides that she's got a deeply held religious belief against photographing black people? And I'm not being sarcastic. That's where we are in the early years of the third decade of the 21st century. Considering what was done to Roe, and considering what Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas wants to be done to Obergefell and Lawrence and Bostock, to Griswold, and knowing what has already been done to the Voting Rights Act by old Balls and Strikes John Roberts, really, how far are we from some well-funded legal chop shop taking a case up through the federal court system, claiming that the Civil Rights Act violates the deeply held religious beliefs of whatever fucking holler that they've dragged some Klansman plaintiff out of? I mean, the Louisville City Ordinance was a law passed democratically. So is the Civil Rights Act. The fact that the Louisville City Council, or whatever form of government they had, passed it, that's just like a little tiny Congress in Louisville. It's not that I think there's any merit to the argument, but the problem is, these goddamn tax-exempt chop shops exist for the purpose of deconstructing every bit of social, cultural, political freedom that this country has made over the course of the last 100 years. Last 80 years, say. The mayor of Louisville, Greg Fisher, said, "We are a city of compassion, and we appreciate the many ways our LGBTQ+ family contributes to our diverse community. Louisville Metro government will continue to enforce to the fullest extent possible its ordinance prohibiting anti-discriminatory practices." I think that's a mistake. "Prohibiting discriminatory practices, and will fight against discrimination in any form." So is it also illegal now, for instance, if a bunch of independent actors, I don't mean actors like on the stage or film or TV, I mean a bunch of people acting independently, if they gather and say with one voice, "If you do business with," what's this horrible human being's name again, "Chelsea Nelson, based on the reasoning that she took up to court, we will not do business with you." That way lies madness. I know that. But this is what the maggots want. This is what the Alliance Defending Freedom wants. And in point of fact, if they take this ruling up on appeal, the Alliance Defending Freedom knows where it's going to end. It's going to end before our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties in Washington, D.C., who will, because I guess Jeebus, who never encouraged anybody in the Gospels to discriminate against anyone. In fact, he ran around with some of the most discriminated people in the culture in which he lived at that time. Samaritans, tax collectors, sex workers, and didn't think much of the high and mighties like Benjamin Beaton. Now, his name is Beaton. Benjamin Beaton. Hey, I didn't come up with the spelling. But we need to understand what organizations like the Alliance Defending Freedom are doing. And they claim to be acting in the name of religious freedom, but what they are acting on is hate. They are acting in the name of hate. It's a fairness ordinance in Louisville. And Chelsea Nelson said it violates the First Amendment because it could force her to take pictures of same-sex weddings. And she's religiously opposed to that. Pardon me for a moment. Fuck her! No, really. Or if she turns out to be he, Chelsea Nelson, fuck him! Wonder how Chelsea Nelson would like it if everywhere they went... If everywhere they went, someone would say, "Oh, are you an evangelical Christian?" Why, yes, I am. Fuck you, get out. Oh, I'm being persecuted. Yes, you are. You're being persecuted based upon your own legal argument, sugar. Now, the Louisville Ordinance prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, public accommodations, and employment. I guess wedding photographers, is that... oh, but wait! The Louisville Ordinance would prohibit discrimination against Chelsea Nelson because she's a homophobe. Or they're a homophobe. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. When the Alliance Destroying Freedom practices, dissembles to deceive. Well, it'll be interesting to see if this case goes up on appeal. Now, bear in mind, before we get our dudgeon too high, yes, she's a she. I just seen a photo of Chelsea Nelson holding her Canon 35mm camera. She filed the lawsuit in 2019. And she requested an injunction. And... Now in 2022, Benjamin Beaton has given her what she wanted. Curiously, though, I don't know how this case, and maybe procedurally, this is how it gets beat. This is how it gets beat on. Oh dear. Because the record disclosed. Okay, back up. at least in theory, American jurisprudence, and especially American jurisprudence inside the federal system, says that courts are not to offer up or rule upon or give advisory opinions. There's another rule that says that cases must be ripe for adjudication. And those are not terribly difficult concepts to grasp. So, riddle me this, Batman. How did this case even manage to stay in court when we take into account the fact that Chelsea Nelson Photography had never, not once, even a little bit, asked to photograph the wedding of a couple of guys or the wedding of a couple of women? Never, not once. Well, Benjamin Beaton said,
state law protects her photography and associated blogging from the burdens the city seeks to impose.
And Benjamin Beaton said that the ordinance doesn't survive strict scrutiny. And yet, in no way does this prevent her from practicing her religion. And she pled that her refusal to photograph same-sex couple weddings, which she's never been asked to do, is born out of a true religious belief. But somewhere along the way, somebody needs to at least remind a court of appeals that this case is, and this is a complicated legal term, bullshit. Because she has never experienced the harm which she claims to protest. Now, this ordinance, this fairness ordinance, was originally passed in 1999. So I guess that's how long it took the Alliance Defending Freedom to drag that $100 bill through the holler. Meanwhile, the Alliance defaming freedom claimed that Chelsea, poor little Chelsea, who has never suffered any harm, injury, or damage whatsoever, is, and this is a quote, a photographer who serves clients regardless of their backgrounds. And Chelsea says she has a passion for marriage. Nothing. I don't know if she's like Sister Clerk Kim Davis, an hour and a half or so from Louisville over in Moorhead, Kentucky, who was so passionate about marriage that she had three or four of them. Never mind what Jesus said about it. But I'm still trying to figure out how you get into court claiming a harm. How do you lie to the court and get away with it? I'm being harmed by this statute. I'm being harmed by this ordinance. Because it says I got to photograph the gay weddings, and I hate the gays. And she has a deeply, deeply held right to her religious hatred. Because God is love, y'all. But she literally had to lie to the court to get her case in. And instead of punishing her for lying to the tribunal and claiming that she's being harmed by this by a statute that has never once harmed her, she gets a win. And now the Alliance Defending Freedom will get their attorney's fees from the city of Louisville. I don't know about you, but I find it sickening. No, she doesn't discriminate, says Ralphs. Of course not. She's a Christian. Chelsea is a member, Steve in New York notes, a member of Our Lady of Duncan Hines. I hope, oh, goodness me. It sure would be nice if she could be canceled on social media. Because being a Christian, she's all about being persecuted in the name of Jesus Christ. No, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but what do I do? How am I supposed to handle it when these sick freaks are right there every day? Barking and grunting and crying and moaning and speaking in tongues and handling snakes and pouring Crisco oil all over each other and complaining that somehow their rights are being violated by when nothing happens to them. Yeah, forgive me, I'm kind of stymied. But, yeah, I know, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut says, this nonstop shit you describe is getting ridiculous. I'm sick of these religious freaks getting all the rights over everyone else. And we've got 1 month left before those SCOTUS cretins go back into session and cause more social and political upheaval. This is another reason why autumn sucks. Autumn sucks. That's right, Darlene in Connecticut. Autumn sucks. But we got about maybe 3 weeks left of summer, so we have to cherish every bit of that. I'll be back into boots and sweaters and leggings again before I know what happened. Not that I hate them, it's just, I like the warm weather. But it is getting, and it's getting ridiculous because basically the system is being gamed by outfits like the Alliance Defaming Freedom. How is anybody more free by allowing this woman to discriminate against people who aren't even doing anything to her? Let's see here. Chelsea Nelson Photography. Let's see if we can find that on the interweb tubes or if it's already crashed. Popped right up pretty quick. Let's see what it sounds like when she decides to pogo stick up onto the cross. Oh, she's got a blog. She does. Oh, look, there's a picture of a cross with a bouquet of flowers right at the intersection of the transept and the post. Oh, and look at all. Louisville, Kentucky summer wedding. Bride girl, I don't think it's going to last. Blog. That was at the Woodhaven Country Club with the boy that I don't think is... Well, never mind. Nope. Nah, he's probably already got a Grindr account. Pretty sure. And... that's a creepy picture. The groom and the groomsman all wore brown shoes. Well, I guess we know a little bit about the happy couple. They hired a bigot to do their wedding. Isn't that just lovely? Trying to see if she's got anything to... Oh, yes. I've admired Larissa and Parker from our first meeting after they shared with me how they both came to trust in Christ and described how decisions about their relationship plus marriage are made in light of a desire to honor the Lord. I light up. Really? Do you, honey? When I get to talk about what a gift God's designed for marriage is, you know, the ones where God's designed for marriage where an old dude with a beard sells his daughter to a young guy with a beard in exchange for some camels and sheep and goats and chickens and a little bit of gold, maybe some silver, maybe some bronze. And when a couple lights up about it, a lot of lighting up going on, just as much as I do. I think that can't help but show through my lens. I pray this sweet couple will be a light to the world through their marriage. Well, it's got at least a 50% chance of surviving there, Chelsea. Jesus Christ. I'm a photographer and blogger based out of Louisville. Most days you can find me stalking my favorite blogs, watching The Office on Netflix with my husband Derek with a K, reading to our little one, cuddling our rescue pup Hugo, and squeezing in time to curl up with a book in the evenings. Maybe, oh, I don't know. Now, I'm pretty sure it's not The Handmaid's Tale. I love the opportunity to be creative and show off God's own creativity on this little slice of the web. Well, not a lot of humility going on there. She literally claims to channel the creativity of God. You know, I'm pretty sure... Oh, she met her husband online through Christian Mangle. I'm a walking billboard. Good God. Well, hopefully she won't be in business for much longer. I mean, sometimes I wonder, sometimes this feels like a case of unintended consequences. Now that she's advertised what a filthy little bigot she is, maybe people will, at the first Pentecostal snake handling temple, they'll still be signing right up, so. Because you know what? We want our wedding photographed by somebody who's never had who's never used her camera on any of Tagay's. Ew. Gotta despise them. And speaking of despising, how about a Jenny Thomas story for this Thorn in the Side Thursday? Mm-hmm. The insurrectionist terrorist spouse of Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas? Well, it turns out that her insurrectionist activities extended far beyond, say, the terrorist attack of January 6, 2021, and helping to organize that. Now, she lobbied legislators in both Wisconsin and Arizona in November 2020, trying to get them to commit to a coup and overturn the legitimate election of Joseph Robinette Biden. And she sent emails to these legislators saying that that Biden won because of electoral fraud. The Washington Post had dug around and gotten some emails through public records law from the state of Wisconsin. It said, please do your constitutional duty. Please stand strong in the face of media and political pressure. Please reflect on the awesome authority granted to you by our Constitution, and then please take action to ensure that a clean slate of electors is chosen for our state. our state. She's not exactly a Wisconsinianite. And, of course, Ginny and Slappy work hand in glove. After the terrorist attack of January 6, 2021, Slappy was the only member of the Supreme Court who said that Nitwit Nero shouldn't have to give over White House records to the J6 committee. She was out there wallowing around, we know now, with John Eastman, and wallowing around with multiple voter registering Mark Meadows, chief of staff to Nitwit Nero. The J6 committee still has not subpoenaed Ginny Thomas. I'd kind of like it if they would. And this works in tandem with another story. Reuters reporting that the J6 committee said today it's reached an agreement with Nitwit Nero and the accounting firm Mazars to hand over some of his financial records. Representative Carolyn Maloney, chairwoman of the Committee on Oversight and Reform, who was recently defeated by Jerry Nadler, said, after numerous court victories, I'm pleased that my committee is... Oh, it's not the J6, it's Oversight. I am pleased that my committee has now reached an agreement to obtain key financial documents that former President Trump fought for years to hide from Congress. And it ends the litigation with a loss, of course, for the Mar-a-Lardass Mugabe. And this all came after an appeals court said, nah, we're going to uphold the subpoena. The walls are closing in, but they're closing in slowly, but they are closing in inexorably. And I gotta wonder, how uncomfortable he is right now. And, of course, we sit and we wait and we wonder and we understand the politics of it all, that it's probably highly unlikely that there's going to be a bill of impeachment against Slappy Thomas. We don't know what the Justice Department is up to. It would be absolutely lovely if... maybe the grand jury was hearing about Miss Ginny. Miss Ginny? Misogyny? What? No, Miss Ginny. Misogynation. But of course, these legal chop shops will take their orders from Slappy, and they will bring their challenges against Griswold and against Lawrence and against... Obergefell and against Bostock, but they won't bring a challenge against Loving. Of course they shouldn't, and they also shouldn't bring challenges to the others. But they're gonna, because they take their marching orders. And bless his heart, Ellie Mustal asked today via Twitter, answer the question, why wasn't Ginny Thomas subpoenaed by the J6 committee? Before you ask me to roll with Liz Cheney. State Senator Kathy Bernier of Wisconsin, one of the Wisconsin lawmakers that Ginsurrection reached out to, answered a question from the Washington Post. She said, as we went through the process and the legal challenges were made and discounted by the judicial system, there was nothing proven as far as actual voter fraud. I was married for 20 years. I took on some identity of my husband, but I had my own mind. Just because you're married to someone doesn't mean that you're a clone. No one's suggesting that Ginsurrection Thomas is a clone. She's very clearly an independent actor. But she and her husband have a curious way of independently acting along the same lines. Maybe it's just those conservative family values, right? And as we move through the first hour of the program, how about some good news? I like this one. I like this one a lot. Today, in federal court, Judge Arnett P. Mehta sentenced a man named Thomas Webster, an insurrectionist, a participant in the terrorist attack on the Capitol of the United States on January 6, 2021. And Judge Mehta sentenced 56-year-old Thomas Webster to 10 years in federal prison. He was convicted in May. A jury, having heard his testimony, said he was lying when he tried to make them think that he was actually helping an officer that he assaulted to see my hands. He's got, in the photograph, he's got his hands up against the officer's gas mask and is trying to tear it off of him, having tackled him to the ground. I guess Judge Mehta wanted to send a message. He said no one should be gleeful that he was facing 17 and a half years in federal prison. Looking at Thomas Webster, Judge Mehta said, "What you did that day, it is hard to really put into words. I still remain shocked every time I see video of the attack. You were the first aggressor. And then all hell broke loose on the police. Exactly when Webster showed up." Assistant U.S. Attorney Hava Aaron Levinson Morrell, addressing the court, said, "Nothing can explain or justify Mr. Webster's rage. Webster is one of the rioters who should have known better. No, counselor, Webster was not a rioter. Webster was a terrorist. Webster was an insurrectionist." Should have known better. Knew or should have known. That troubling, sometimes troubling legal standard. But see, here's the kicker. Thomas Webster is a former NYPD cop. Yeah, so much for back the blue, right? Lawyer Morrell said he feels entitled to do what he wants as a former police officer. He went old school. He went rogue. He instigated violence. He was anticipating and ready for a violent altercation. Meanwhile, Judge Mehta said, "I take no pleasure in doing this." And went on to tell Webster, "You constructed an alternative truth." Heh, alternative facts. Remember when Lady Skeletor coined that phrase early in the Nitwit Nero administration? Judge Mehta went on to say, "The video doesn't lie. The jury saw through it. I saw through it. It wasn't that hard. And I'm sorry you thought you could get up there and suggest otherwise." His pettifoggers, having no law to pound on and no facts to pound on, decided to instead, in complete, as is the ancient custom, pound on the table. And they said that Thomas Webster deserved a lower sentence because he suffered from the PTSD because he was a police officer in New York City. And that he only done what he done on January 6th because he was having the flashbacks. Maybe I just don't understand. But something makes me think that if you have PTSD and you're prone to flashbacks, maybe you don't go to a terrorist attack on the capital of the United States. Maybe that'll cut down on the flashbacks. So this is as bad as it's gotten for any of the MAGAT insurrectionists. 10 years. He was facing 17 and a half, and he should have gotten all of them. Because he engaged in a terrorist attack against the United States of America, you and me and every other decent human being who works and struggles and hopes and dreams that we can achieve some portion in our lifetime of that more perfect union. 10 years. When there's an argument that he ought to swing. And I don't even support the death penalty. Maybe someday somebody will go up for 20, 30, 40 years for this shit. But not today. Not today. But maybe someday. And I just loved this headline. You know, of course, about the half-wit, half-term, half-baked Alaska governor who got her ass handed to her last night by an indigenous woman, Mary Peltola. Well, when Caribou Barbie heard the news, she naturally began to piss and moan. She agreed to the rules of the ranked choice voting when she became a candidate on April Fool's Day. But all of a sudden, once she got her ass handed to her, well, Godzilla from Wasilla cried, "It ain't fair! It ain't fair!" "Really?" she asked when she was told, "Is this your ass? Here, let me hand it to you." "Really?" "When it comes down to second and third place votes, that's going to decide who's going to win? Really? Really? Alaskans want Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi?" Curiously, neither Biden nor Pelosi were on the ballot. Yeah, she's a real Lulu. But we knew that.
"Well, just a tremendous sense of gratitude and appreciation for the people who've put trust in me to fill out the remainder of Congressman Young's term. Like you said, he's represented Alaska very well for the last 49 years, and it's just a tremendous honor to come in and finish out the remainder of his term. And I intend to be, in so many ways, you know, really trying to live up to the legacy that Don laid for Alaska and champion and work for all Alaskans.
We have just begun, and it's a fight for what is right for Alaska and for our nation. And I do repeat that you don't need a title, you don't need an office to make a difference. So we're going to get out there using whatever tools and forums and formats that we have to fight for what's right."
Yeah, good luck with all of that, Sarah. I don't have to be in office. No, you don't. And the people of Alaska don't want you to be. And, well, come November, there will be another contest for a full two-year term. Here's hoping that the people of Alaska remain, they continue their little streak of sanity. Darlene in Connecticut says, "We as good people want a more perfect union." Oh, stop being an elitist, says Ginsurrection Thomas. I know. Sometimes it just gets out of control with me. Oh, and let's run out to Oklahoma Stan for a minute. The Attorney General of Oklahoma Stan is a creep by the name of John O'Connor. He is, of course, a pasty-faced, doughy old white man. And he has issued a pronouncement as Attorney General that prosecutors in Oklahoma should charge and torment people who perform elective abortions. He wants him some doctors in prison because, you know, Oklahoma Stan is just drowning in physicians. Right. He issued official guidance for how prosecutors should handle the new anti-abortion laws. Yeah. And he says that the laws don't apply to pregnant women who have an abortion or to unintentional miscarriages or ectopic pregnancies or the use of contraceptions, including Plan B and other emergency contraceptives. None of our laws, civil or criminal, punish the mother in connection with an abortion. As if that somehow alleviates his responsibility as a misogynistic old prick. But on the other hand, Dr. Dana Stone, an obstetrician in Oklahoma City, said, "Part of what's been chilling for OBGYNs is how much am I going to be second-guessed if I think a woman's life is in danger?" Right, because that's where the wiggle room is for the anti-abortion freaks. He said prosecutors should use careful discretion in deciding to prosecute when no pattern or trend exists and where evidence of criminal intent is unclear. That means all a prosecutor has to do is go to the jury, grand jury, and say, "Well, the criminal intent is clear. Officer, in charge of this doctor, did you think his criminal intent was clear?" "Yes, I did." Because Oklahoma also criminalized aiding or abetting the commission of an illegal abortion. But he said, advocacy is free speech, you know, until it's not. And clergy and social workers and others who routinely work with pregnant women in Oklahoma Stan said, "Yeah, okay, sure." Rabia Mukadam is a senior staff attorney at the Center for Reproductive Rights and said, "To be frank, applying a state law to criminalize helping someone get out of state to get an abortion would be pretty unhinged under the traditional understanding of how criminal law functions. That said, it is not surprising that there is a lot of fear around those kinds of activities, precisely because these laws are designed to terrify people." Yeah. It's terrorism as practiced by a state legislature. moreover, that's the point. And the cruelty itself is the point. Busy. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, dear God, please, no. I will never understand. Well, according to a report in Radar Online, oh, Jesus. Melanoma felt personally violated by the fact that the FBI showed up at Merida Lardass and took back some property that belonged to the people of the United States. She felt violated. And in fact, that when the FBI came and got all those boxes, Melanoma felt so violated that she went out and bought all new underwear. One source said, Melanoma doesn't like the idea of strangers going rifling through her things. Who knows who touched her underwear during the raid? That's right. They planted top secret documents. The FBI did. They planted top secret documents in her maiden forms. Sure. There's nowhere these conspiracy freaks won't go. Who knows who touched her underwear during the raid? She's never going to feel comfortable wearing those ever again. Most people don't know that melanoma is a bigger germaphobe than her husband. She hates people touching her and certainly doesn't want to put on lingerie that FBI agents have had their hands all over. Without a shred of proof anywhere that any FBI agent anywhere touched anything in her lingerie drawer or drawers. And of course she doesn't like people touching her. That cold, undead sensation, the fact of the matter is, she was, if anybody got anywhere near any of her cabinetry, if the FBI saw anything, it was probably a box of dirt from the old country. Missing in here is the note that in the affidavit for the search warrant, there was no desire evinced by the FBI to check out melanoma's skid marks. It just doesn't stop. Oh, I know. Ralph says, "Aw, poor melanoma." It's just ridiculous. And by the way, since we were talking about some legal process earlier, Republican, good observation, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut noting, hang on. Melanoma was a stripper. She should be totally at home with men rifling through her under things. Hell, for all we know, she was selling them online. I'll leave it at that. But Doug Mastriano, of course, is the maggot candidate for governor in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Photographs recently emerged of then Colonel Mastriano dressed up as a treasonous Confederate soldier back in 2013 or so. Hi, Alan. That's good. Cowbell for Alan. Melanoma thought it was a panty raid. Sorry. Not sorry. Enjoy your cowbell, Alan. No, back to Doug Mastriano. This genius has now sued the J6 committee. According to Politico, in the suit, Mastriano argues that the committee's rules and composition mean it cannot compel witnesses to sit for depositions. He wants declaratory judgment relief. He wants the judge to declare that the committee can't compel him to sit for a deposition. And, of course, being a grifter, he wants the committee to pay his attorney's fees. He sued all the members of the select committee, the committee itself, and, of course, Nancy Pelosi. Mastriano, of course, was present on January 6th at the terrorist attack on constitutional governance in the United States. In the interim, the select committee wrote to Mastriano and said, based on publicly available information and information produced to the select committee, we believe that you have documents and information that are relevant to the select committee's investigation. For example, we understand that you have knowledge of and participated in a plan to arrange for an alternate slate of electors to be presented to the President of the Senate on January 6, 2021, and we understand that you spoke with former President Trump about your post-election activities. Based on your public statements, in other words, because you couldn't keep your stupid mouth shut, we understand that you were present during the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, and you witnessed agitators getting in the face of police, and agitators start pushing the police up the steps. We'd like to better understand these statements and expenditures, events that you witnessed or in which you participated, and communications we believe you may have had with national, state, and local officials about the outcome of the November 2020 election. Hopefully he will not succeed. Others who have tried to challenge the committee's lawful ability to issue deposition subpoenas, every last one of them have lost. But Mastriano says he's different. Yeah, he is. I mean, he was an active participant in the terrorist attack. Well, never mind. And he's complaining that his pettifoggers are saying, they can't conduct depositions without a ranking member from the opposing party, from the Republican Party. Isn't that what Liz Cheney is? One. And two, if the opposing party actively and positively refuses to participate, haven't they kind of waived that right? Shouldn't they be estopped, as the law says? Shouldn't they be estopped from raising the issue? Oh, and by the way, Thomas Webster, the ex-NYPD cop with the PTSD, he wept openly in court. Yeah, suddenly he was sorry. the other day, we had the story of the 12-year-old who brought a pistol to school in Oakland, California, and shot a fellow student. Mercifully, the other student was not killed. Well, you know, Texas is in a constant state of consternation and always has to one-up anything that happens in California, so it comes as no surprise that down toward John Britvo country in Corpus Christi, a 4-year-old brought a loaded pistol to school. An off-duty police officer working at the school called in for assistance, advising that a 4-year-old student was in possession of a loaded handgun on campus. The cop, for once, not wetting himself and running away like they did in Uvalde, went up and took the pistol away from the little kid. And it's at least a sign of hope that Texas actually has a statute that makes it a crime for an adult to make a firearm accessible to children. That was Texas. We talked about Oakland. Then there was this past Monday in Arizona, Stan, where a 7-year-old had a non-loaded firearm, a pistol, in their backpack, and a fully loaded magazine to go with it. That was in Cochise, Arizona, Stan. After that happened, Daddy went home from work to check on his goons and found he was down not one gun, but two. Because the 7-year-old had taken not one pistol, but two, and hid the second pistol in the administrative offices of the school while the kid was waiting for school officials. The parents were interviewed and advised that the weapons had been placed in what they believed to be, there's that believing again, a secure location away from the children after a recent camping trip, but it appears that the second grader was able to gain access and take the handguns to school. You know, when it comes to the storage of firearms, I don't think faith is a particularly good standard. Oh, we believe the kid won't find... We're talking about a 7-year-old. A 7-year-old can find anything, anywhere, because they're curious. And now the 7-year-old will be up on juvenile charges, disciplinary proceedings in the state of Arizona. No word on the faith-based daddy and mama after their camping trip. Wow. You know, just wow. What else? Let's see. And by the way, we are into the second hour of the program. It is Conversation Radio. If you've got something you'd like to share with the community, please feel free. The stress line number is 844-843-4676, 844, the horn. And on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. That'll get you right through. Also, 304-574-8178. That rings into the Skype line, too. Also in the department of, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. It looks like there's a squabble breaking out between the worst thing ever to slip, slither, creep, crawl, or belly flop out of Colbert County, Alabama. I'm talking about Addison Mitch McConnell. And Rick Skeletor Scott, who somehow managed to evade conviction in the single largest Medicaid fraud case in the history of the United States. Now, Rick Skeletor Scott is chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. And that notorious birdcage liner, the Washington Examiner, published his maunderings in their rag. In which the senator from Florida, something headlined Washington versus Washington versus Republicans. Washington versus Republican voters. Skeletor wrote, "When I became the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, Republicans had just lost control of the Senate. This does not merely mean Republicans lost the ability to lead committees. It means we lost the ability to control anything about what the Senate does. The result? President Joe Biden and the Democrats opened our southern border for an invasion." I somehow managed to miss that. Did you catch it? Oh, wait, that's total fiction. Complete and utter fantastic bullshit. "And a massive flow of illegal drugs engaged in enough deficit spending to drive inflation through the roof." How much money did you take in PPP loans that were forgiven there, Skeletor? "Took away America's energy independence." No. "Drove America into a recession." I don't know how many economists does it take saying we are not in a recession before it's not a recession. "And implemented soft on crime policies that have led to a national epidemic of violent crime." The fact that you can get an AR-15 in a goddamn gumball machine has nothing to do with that, I'm sure. And now, without mentioning Moscow Mitch's name, he's... "Unfortunately, many of the very people responsible for losing the Senate last cycle are now trying to stop us from winning the majority this time by trash-talking our Republican candidates." You know, like Dr. Oz and Herschel and the Yale hillbilly J.D. Vance. Yeah, Rick Skeletor Scott's pissed off that Moscow Mitch had a little something to say about the what was the term? Candidate quality.
"You know, when you complain and lament that we have bad candidates, what you're really saying is you have contempt for the voters who chose them."
Well, frankly, voters in Georgia who chose Herschel Walker either deserve contempt or are beneath it. And the same for those folks in the Buckeye State who chose J.D. Hillbilly. Or the mouth-breathing knuckle walkers who decided that a guy who sold patent medicines and cinnamon as a cure for diabetes would be a good candidate in Pennsylvania, even though he's from New Jersey.
"Now we're at the heart of the matter. Much of Washington's chattering class disrespects and secretly, or not so secretly, loathes Republican voters."
Well, they're kind of loathable, aren't they? When they pick the Herschel Walkers and the Ozzes and the
Blake Masters.
I love that guy. And J.D. Hillbillies. Protege of the Tiger Mom. Row.
"We have great candidates with incredible backgrounds."
And you know what? I agree. With incredible backgrounds, meaning backgrounds that are not credible.
"And ideas to make our country better."
You know, like Rick Scott's idea to starve Granny to death. So his hedge fund pals can, oh, I don't know, afford a 24-karat gold shower curtain or something.
Do I wish they had more money than their Democratic opponent? Of course. But we have great candidates, chosen by the voters in their states, who got up that morning and brushed their tooth and went off to vote. No, and our job is to help each one of them win. And once a candidate wins, Washington will, as usual, immediately change its collective mind and say,
I was secretly on the senator's side the whole time. I love this. The whining is palpable.
While the media in Washington want to try and tear down our candidates, voters put forward incredible people.
That word, I don't think it means what he thinks it means.
To serve in the Senate, a world-renowned doctor
and patent snake oil salesman,
a Heisman Trophy winner,
who put a gun to his ex-wife's head,
and successful businessman, a small businessman and congressman from a farming community, a best-selling author who has shown the struggles in America from drug addiction.
Yeah, sure, J.D. Sure, Jan.
A successful tech entrepreneur and Iraq War veteran who served two terms as state attorney general. A successful construction company entrepreneur and a nurse who has fought for change at the VA so our heroes can get the care they deserve.
These are just a few of our amazing candidates who will win in November. Yeah, keep telling yourself that, Skeletor.
Let me be clear. We will overcome the Washington naysayers and their anonymous quotes. We will beat the Democrats, and we will take control of the Senate this fall. Write it down.
If you can write.
And when we do, we will be in a position to stop this confused and ridiculous president.
You know, he sounds that there's just, you can say a lot about Joe Biden, but he doesn't seem confused to me. He seems rock solid, and he seems to have the heart and the will of a heavyweight champion. And you get the idea he's rather enjoying punching the living shit out of the Republicans now, and God, that makes me feel good.
From further damaging our great country and present a positive agenda that'll be good for all of America, as long as they're white and upper class and mostly male.
I had that part.
As a side benefit, we will be able to ignore the fools who've been trash-talking Republican candidates and Republican voters. That's a win-win in my book.
You wonder if Rick Scott gets up every morning and thanks God that he's not in prison. Because he probably should. Well, listen, Rick, come on. Let's you and Mitch fight. And I'm all for them to just beat the piss out of each other all the way from now till November the 8th. Meanwhile, they're trying to Moscow Mitch's minions are trying to explain away the candidate quality statement.
Leader McConnell's been on airplanes and on the phone all month, and that helped make August the biggest month of the cycle so far.
That, according to Jack Pandahl, who's a spokescreep for the Senate Leadership Fund, a PAC that Moscow Mitch controls. And other Senate insiders are, well, they're not saying very kind or generous things about Senator Skeletor. who doesn't look too terribly much like a man of the people when he swans off on an Italian yacht vacation while his own committee was pulling TV ads in states like Arizona and Pennsylvania, maybe Ohio. And it all goes back to Skeletor's 11-point plan to rescue America. You remember that one? That one went over like a turd in a punch bowl with Moscow Mitch. His plan, his 12-point plan. Number one's education. We're going to stop teaching revisionist history of the radical left. Our kids will learn about how wonderful it is to be white. No, I added that part. I don't think he understands what historical revisionism is. Do you? Because historical revisionism is saying we can't teach about Ruby Bridges. We can't teach about Dr. King because it might make, you know, white people like Rick Skeletor sad. We can't teach what the government of the United States did to indigenous people. And at point two, colorblind equality, we're going to eliminate racial politics in America. That means we're only going to listen to white people. We're going to enforce, number three, safety and crime. We're going to enforce all of them, all the laws, and increase penalties for theft and violent crime and doing anything that, you know, Republicans don't like. And, of course, that's accompanied with a photograph of a cop car on fire. No word as to whether that was done by, I don't know, maybe some Proud Boys?
Nations have borders. We should give that a try.
Yeah, because we don't have any borders.
We're going to grow America's economy and starve Washington's economy.
Yeah, that's that government drownable in a bathtub.
Many government agencies should be either moved out of Washington or shuttered entirely.
That's number six. Number seven is a nod to the big lie.
Today's Democrat Party,
it's Democratic, you goddamn dick, is
trying to rig elections and pack the courts because they've given up on democracy.
Well, the court packing was actually done by the Republican Party. That's how we got Gorsuch and Brat and the Handmaid, who's a member of a fucking cult.
The new eight family, the nuclear family, is crucial to civilization. It is God's design for humanity, and it must be protected.
You know how you protect the American family? By not attacking the American family. By not making it harder for American families to, you know, eat or have housing. Which, of course, anything a Republican does will contribute to. The not eating. The struggling to have a roof over their head. Because it's like something my grandmother said oh so many years ago. Republicans promised us three meals a day and they delivered. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. And number nine is gender.
Men and women are biologically different. Male and female, he created them.
And then some babbling about the transes and the abortions.
There's a new religion of big tech, secular religion things.
Number 11 is America First. You know, pure fascism. And then number 12 is cutting taxes, you know, making sure that none of his hedge fund buddies have to pay for the privilege of having most of America, most of the resources of America, go to propping up their plutocrat asses. And by the way, back to the issue of the water crisis in Jackson, Mississippi. Lady V says, please speak more about the situation in Mississippi. Most of my relatives live closer to Carthage, which is towards the center, but I do have a cousin in Jackson who thankfully has a friend who has a house just outside of Jackson. This, Horn Friends, is pure, undiluted, unadulterated racism. We live in the 21st century, in the year of our Lord 2022, and we put up with this shit because some folks wallow in their ignorance. Thanks for what you do, Robin. Continue to shine. Thanks for every wonderful, well-thought word you send, Lady B. I mean, the mayor of Jackson, Chokwe Lumumba, whom I've met, by the way, I think I even interviewed him back in 2017 in New Orleans, Network Nation. He recently pointed out that the water crisis in Jackson, in which, you know, 180,000 people, most of them black, have no access to water that they can drink in or bathe in or brush their teeth in or wash clothes in, because the water system has failed. In an American city, in an American state, in the third decade, in the early years of the third decade of the 21st century, amen. You know, that's something that happens to shithole countries, as Nitwit Nero would point out. But Mayor Lumumba pointed out, and accurately, that what has happened in Jackson is a perfect storm. The intersection of refusing to acknowledge climate change and what climate change means for places like Mississippi Stan, which has for all intents and purposes endured monsoon conditions over the course of this waning summer, and 30 years of neglect. 30 years of systemic neglect of a majority-minority city in the South. And now the chickens are home to roost. And this is the very definition of what we talk about when we talk about environmental racism. When you neglect an area because that area is largely populated by people one political party does not like, maybe even hates, this is where you wind up. Flint is where you wind up. Lead in the water, poison in the water, mud in the water, bacteria in the water, Giardia, Salmonella, who knows? And a water system that needed replaced 30 years ago. I know a little bit about that because I still refuse to forget what Feedum Industries did to West Virginia 8 years ago. When a dude who got busted for selling coke out of a bar was allowed to own a chemical supply company and so negligently, grossly negligently, willfully, wantonly, recklessly managed their tanks, that 300,000 people in 9 counties in West Virginia were involuntarily subjected to being participants in a long-term study of the effects of methyl chlorohexane methanol on the human body. And the pipes that water, that poisoned water, traveled through are in some cases nearly 100 years old. And rusty. And West Virginia American Water Company was losing 30% of the water that they were pumping out of that they were pumping from the water source into those aforementioned nine counties. Way back then, we did some calculating, and this was, you know, this was back before the Great Purity Wars of 2016. And there were some people who, you know, we did some calculations, and if that problem had been appropriately remedied, it would have required an infusion of billions of dollars in a state that is one of the most well-watered in the country, and yet where all too many people don't have clean drinking water because of the coal industry. And that methylchlorohexane methanol, that MCHM, that was a chemical used to clean coal and make it suitable for transport and burning in coal-fired power plants. It's not that far different in Flint, and it's certainly not that far different in Jackson. And bear in mind that the legislature of Muzuzupistan is wholly, completely, and utterly incapable and largely unwilling to do the work necessary to bring that water system into not only compliance, but non-toxicity. And if it's happening in Jackson, you can bet your ass that it's not much different in Iuka or Corinth or Oxford or Starkville. Yeah. Or anywhere else in that poor state. That poor, poor state. And it is, Lady B, racism. And the question is, as the question always is, you know, it's hard enough to vote in a state like Mississippi. People who want better in Mississippi had better, by God, vote like their lives depend on it, because they do. Wonder how many people have already gotten sick, or how many newborns there are in Jackson who need distilled water to make formula for babies' bottles. It's horrifying to contemplate and infuriating, because again, it's a self-inflicted wound, or, well, maybe not self-inflicted. The majority of the population of Jackson probably did not want or even contribute to this happening. It is, in fact, the plantation mentality that still obtains in a state where one city, Vicksburg, went over 100 years without celebrating Independence Day because it was also the day that Vicksburg fell to the military forces trying to stop white Mississippians from trying to own human beings. It's almost as though the Klan went underground and got a better suit of clothes and became things like white citizens' councils. Remember Senator Cindy Hyde Smith of Mississippistan, that dear lady who went down to the home of Jefferson Davis, which the state of Mississippi still maintains as a cherished part of its heritage, and expends money every year maintaining, that could maybe at some point in time have gone to, making the water system in Jackson functional. Yeah, she went down there to Beau Visage or Beau Reeve, Yeah, somewhere near Biloxi or whatever. Yeah, she went down there and grabbed her up a musket and put on a kepi hat of a treasonous Confederate soldier. Sent her daughter to a racist academy. And the white folks just go out and vote for her. And she bragged about wanting to be in the first row watching a lynching. Still sitting there in the Senate. Yes, absolutely. And of course, I'm sure Mississippi is gerrymandered all to fuck. So as to dilute the voting power of anyone in that state who wants better. Now, Jeremy with a note, subject line, Republicans. Evidently, the GOP maggot party had claimed they will sue to stop the college loan debt relief because it's just not fair. And they will. Mm-hmm. Any decent thing for the people of the United States, they will sue because they know they've got six most puissant, dread, sovereign Catholic majesties sitting on the court who will do anything and everything to stop anything that's good for the majority of the people of the country. As to the water supply situation, Jack in Shreveport says, but by the way, on the undrinkable water situation, our area had a boil advisory last night. I'm not sure what the current status is. I'm drinking bottled water and making coffee with it. It happens from time to time. It was probably due to a broken water main somewhere. Yeah, that, or you know, heavy rains can contribute to it. We get boil water advisories around here. We try not to drink out of the tap here. Water for this area is drawn out of a little stream called Mill Creek that feeds into the New River. And lately, with all the rain we've had, did you ever accidentally take a big gulp of swimming pool water? That real bleachy taste? That's what ours tastes like right now. And I just opened my reusable water bottle and got a sip because we have to buy, and I do, I buy distilled water and bring it in here. And we use it to make ice, and we use it for drinking, we use it for cooking. Even though there's a tap in here that runs, yeah. But you don't want to drink it, because America is now a don't-drink-the-water country. Lady B adding, but can't and shouldn't the federal government step in? Can't the federal government demand Mississippi provide fresh, clean, and easily accessible water? Isn't that a public utility? Probably not. It's probably not a public utility because an outfit called American Water, which is actually owned overseas, offshore, the holding company, I think, is in England, and the mothership is in Germany, came through and bought up all the public water systems for a song because, you know, the private sector can do so much better than government can. Remember what Ronnie Reagan said, old 666 himself.
The nine most dangerous words in the English language are, well, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
The federal government should step in. FEMA will be made available for whatever that amounts to. We had some experience here with FEMA. They proved to be as useless as a screen door on a submarine. And that is not an uncommon experience with FEMA. The federal government could appropriate emergency funds for that water system. But the federal government cannot step in and actually oversee the work because states rats. So if you give umpty gajillion dollars to fix the water supply system of Jackson, Mississippi, and if it is administered out of the State House of Mississippi, One drop out of every gallon will actually go to the water system, while corrupt Republican politicians wet their beaks in the rest of every gallon. Does that make any sense, Lady B? Lady B notes, our water comes from the snowpack in the mountains. We're first source, but we still have to share the Colorado River with Arizona, Nevada, and Utah, and every year they demand more and more. Yeah. Of a river that has less and less. Because reduced snowpack is also a function of, there it is again, climate change. Because frankly, Americans, left, right, and center, mostly don't want to hear about climate change. Because it's scary and it's depressing. And people feel powerless to deal with it. And people feel powerless to deal with it because we have one of the two major political parties that is hell-bent on sitting in a rowboat on a lake of gasoline striking matches. I wish that analogy were not so apt, but it is. Stand by. For some reason or another, I have a whopping headache. Might just be a matter of being tired. What else? Because there's so much else. Oh, my pleasure, Ellen. Ellen, for her cowbell earlier, said, woohoo, a cowbell, thanks. Happy to provide it. God knows you earned it with that panty braid comment. Mechanicsville, Virginia. This is a... interesting, to say the least. It's, you know, the first day of September, and all across the country, communities get worked up. I mean, I'm worked up. My Mountaineers are going to open a new season and break my heart again. Football. And in little communities all over America, the high school sports programs provide the nucleus around which the community revolves, whether it be basketball or baseball or particularly football on Friday nights. And so they're in Hanover, Virginia. They were all excited about the upcoming season of the Mechanicsville High School football team. Until they weren't. Because before they could blow the first whistle tee up the first kickoff, the Mechanicsville football team season is over. Because apparently the Mechanicsville High School football team has what is politely described as a hazing problem. You know what hazing is? Where the more senior members of a group subject the new members of a group to indignities in order to, as they are told, build team spirit. The folks at NBC 12 over in Hanover, or in that neck of the woods in the Old Dominion, reported that, according to a spokesperson with the school division, it all stems from allegations of assault that took place among the upperclassmen on the football team and its younger members. Now, a 12th grade football player can be decidedly different in terms of growth and development from, say, a 9th grade football player. Because in those, 16, 17, 18-year-old era, there's a lot of growing goes on. These growth plates and shoulders broaden. They've had 4 years, three, 4 years working out in the high school weight room. Because, school districts will spend a shit ton of money on the athletic weight room rather than spend it on something frivolous like books. And so in Mechanicsville, the upperclassmen were hazing, otherwise known as assaulting, the younger members of the team. A parent spilled the tea to NBC 12, chose not to disclose the identity of one of the team's players. The parent said their son was not involved in the alleged assault and didn't witness the incident, but says coaches and administration had a meeting with players earlier in the week. Rumors began to spread among the players. The parent told NBC 12, "It's perfectly understandable that the school system can't give out a lot of details. All we're asking is what has happened in the grand scheme of things. That's my biggest problem right now, is the communication to parents." And the parent was apparently, see what I did there, pissed off about the fact that they had team pictures one day. The parents showed up, took some pictures, and then they canceled practice and canceled the team picture. This sounds fairly serious, doesn't it? Finally, the sheriff's department confirmed that they got an anonymous tip that upperclassmen were assaulting other students at Mechanicsville High School. And multiple students are being interviewed. And when it gets this squirrely, trying to describe something that... it's just a little hazing. No, this is probably not just assault. It's probably sexual assault. More than 60 interviews have been conducted. And the Sheriff's Department says, "We can share that anyone found to be in violation of the Code of Student Conduct and or school board policy will be held fully accountable." Sounds like some of the upperclassmen may have gotten kind of rapey. How about that? If you were a parent, wouldn't you be furious? How could you not be? Well, that's only half of the Mechanicsville story. The other half of the Mechanicsville story has to do with something, different. Because the school board there in Hanover County decided that they needed to have a meeting and they needed to be establishing some new policies. Oh, God, you know where this is going, don't you? Of course. Yeah, here we go. The Hanover County School Board felt a driving need to deal with the potty. Now, bear in mind, Mechanicsville High School has a rape problem. At the very least, some kind of violent assault problem. What's the school board worried about? Who goes to which potty? And they and these are some real fascist assholes. They just enacted a policy that does everything short of requiring LGBTQ students to wear little pink triangles sewn onto their clothing. Especially if they're, you know what, trans. Policy. Restrooms. A student, along with their parent or guardian, must submit a written request to the principal of the school where the student attends. School administration will receive all relevant information, which may include a statement from the student that, among other things, specifies their gender identity and how they have consistently, persistently, and insistently, God, what is this, Dr. Seuss, expressed that identity. Signed statements from the student's personal physician, if they've got one, this is America, therapist, or licensed counselor verifying that the student has been diagnosed with gender dysphoria and or that the student consistently and authentically expresses a binary gender identity. Statements from the student's parent or guardian, student disciplinary or criminal records. Information related to the privacy and safety of other students. How can a kid... What? And any other relevant information, including documents from other interested parties. That makes sure that the grunting religious maniacs get their say. School administration may request a meeting with the student and the student's parent or legal guardian to discuss the request and solicit additional information. After compiling all relevant documentation, the principal of the school in which the student is enrolled will provide a written summary of the request. This summary, along with the supporting documentation, will be considered by the school board, which retains the final authority to approve or decline the request, you know, to use the restroom. The school board will consider and review the submission as soon as practically feasible, you know, maybe a year after the kids graduated or died, and no later than its next regularly scheduled monthly business meeting, taking into consideration all the relevant information. The school board can request additional information if necessary and wait to resolve the request until it obtains all relevant information. The school board will provide their decision in writing to the parent or legal guardian of the student seeking the ability to use the restroom. Now, take out trans kid, put in black kid, and you get an idea of exactly what the origins of this kind of administrative brutality are. It's an attempt to drive trans kids back into the closet. It's an attempt to erase trans kids from that county's student population. And it's also a way to make it more to make it possible for the aforementioned religious maniacs to torment these children. And this is what the school board got up to. At the same time that Mechanicsville High School was having a rape problem. The vote in the Hanover County School Board was 5-2 in favor of the potty policy. I mean, this is outing children to third parties. You know, even within the LGBTQ community, there's a we've had this debate about Lindsey Graham. It is generally understood that it is absolutely unforgivable to out someone against their will. No cis kid is required to turn in their juvenile disciplinary record to go to the potty. And, by the way, going back to the story out of Mechanicsville High School, it's as bad as I thought. All this business about who can go to the bathroom, it was a week after, as one person responding to the post says, less than a week after we found out that sexual assaults have allegedly been happening at one of the high schools in the county for at least 4 years. And they're vilifying the trans kids.
Yeah, but football's important, and it teaches teamwork and makes men out of men.
And by the way, we mentioned Demeaning Freedom earlier, that filthy little chop-chop that attacked an equality, a fairness ordinance in Louisville, Kentucky. Guess who wrote the potty policy for the Hanover County Public Schools? That's right, the Alliance Demeaning Freedom, a verified, proven hate group. I wonder if they did it for free. And, you know, this is, again, a product of dragging $100 bills down through hollers, and they found somebody in Hanover County. They found five members of the school board. This is part of the ongoing assault against school boards. Just like what we heard from the other the audio the other night out of Texas, and that Jenna carping about, I didn't learn nothing about no borders. You quit being mean to me with your brain.
It may not look like it, but these are all the same issues. Just with different marginalized communities. I read an article about
something going on down in Talabama. Because of legislation passed by the Talabama legislature, schools all over Alabama are going through, administrators are going through. They had previously been welcoming. They'd previously been open. But because of the dictate of the MAGIT legislature, the self-same administrators who had previously been open and welcoming are going through tearing down rainbow flags and serving notice that all are not welcome in school systems where the law says every child, deserves an education. Oh, well. Right? Who cares? Right? There was an article that went with the post that I saw. It came from The Intercept. The reporter is Natasha Leonard. Something that looks like a little bit of a victory. One of the most right-wing circuit courts of appeal in the United States, if not the most right-wing, entered an injunction against the state of Arkansas. It applies only to the state of Arkansas. And their law banning gender-affirming care. It cannot, according to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, be enforced. And shall not be enforced. Because it would cause irreparable harm to trans kids and the people who love them. It's a good article. And it is a win. But down toward the end of it, a really telling paragraph. It is the desire for the elimination of trans people that informs the right-wing focus on trans kids. Calling on that most conservative figuration, the imperiled cis white child, the right targets living, breathing trans children. A demographic with the fewest capacities and resources with which to fight back. The trans kids fighting this onslaught in courts, in classrooms, and in the streets continue to show immense resilience. They deserve fierce, fierce, mass public support. And then this. And it is no less than shameful that their struggle is sidelined by certain leftists as a culture war distraction. If even conservative courts can see the ideological grounding and harmful consequences of this Republican effort, there can be no excuses made for complicit liberals. It's a very well-crafted string of words that essentially boils down to, if we do not all hang together, we shall surely hang separately. It's kind of like, England hanging on during the Blitz. While the rest of the world largely stood by. The LGBTQ community didn't choose this front. It was chosen for us largely for economic reasons by outfits like the Alliance Defaming Freedom as a means of fundraising on marginalized people's backs. And they are having more success now than they've had in many other arenas because they have gotten complicity from places they never, ever expected to find it. There in Talabama, an art teacher had the principal, came through her classroom and, as I said, tore down her pride flags. And what's curious is the sponsor of the bill in Alabama is a maggot freak by the name of Representative Scott Stathagen. He's from Hartsel. I know where Hartsel is. And in discussing potty problems, and this is Alabama's version of Don't Say Gay. And Stathagen said,
"Well, almost every single school district in this state is dealing with this issue with opposite genders wanting to use opposite bathrooms."
I don't think the algebra of that works, does it? But that's what he said. The problem is, though, that a reporter for AL.com started calling around all the school districts in Alabama. And just as Chelsea Nelson in Louisville, Kentucky had never lost a minute's work because of the fairness ordinance in Louisville and was allowed to just lie to the court with the connivance and the contrivance of the Alliance Demeaning Freedom, well, so too did the folks at AL.com find out that not one of the school systems, the county school systems or city school systems in Alabama that they called had ever had even one incident, not one, relating to the White Wings' obsession with who goes potty where. Little kids, teenagers, did not choose this. They have been dragged into this by some of the most hateful adults this country has to offer. And there's only one way to stop this, and that is to slap them down, push back, refuse to tolerate it, speak out. Read these stories, be aware of them, and know that there will always be an aspect of any progressive, any liberal, any Democrat's life. There will always be some aspect that will be fodder from an attack from a right wing that is both relentless and remorseless. And that no matter how safe you feel, they are always, always coming for you next. Yeah, Emilio, you're right. That school is genuinely, authentically, truthfully, and assuredly messed up.
Well, you know, I mean, there's been rapes going on there at the high school for for 4 years. But you know what? That's just locker room stuff. That's boys being boys. Getting all, you know, cause, you know, when you're high school senior, high school junior, you want to get your rape on. Football build character. Yes.
It's exhausting, isn't it? I feel like it is. Oh, and by the way, while we're talking about schools and school kids and adults, how about this? And lo and behold, it comes out of right here and almost level west by Coal Manchinistan. And the Buckeye State. Because, of course, Ohio is just across our river from West Virginia. And it is our river. William J. Morrison III, same age as me, has been taken in and arrested. He lured two children into his car with an offer of money. William J. Morrison III approached, allegedly, a 9-year-old boy and a 12-year-old little girl. It was August the 17th, and he offered the two kids $20 to babysit his 4-year-old child. The kids got in the car. So William J. Morrison III then drove a little ways, and he stopped the car and he told the 9-year-old little boy to get out. And the little boy, he said, I think there's something wrong with the tire. Get out. Yeah, because you tell a little 9-year-old boy, get out and go look at that tire. Might be something wrong with it. And the little 9-year-old boy got out of the car. William J. Morrison III shut the door and drove away. Because it wasn't about the little 9-year-old boy for William J. Morrison III. He drove away with the 12-year-old little girl still in the car. And then the little girl began to figure out that something wasn't right. And she began to cry. And when she began to cry, William J. Morrison III, age 59, said, Okay, I was only going to give you $20, I give you $100. A few blocks later, down in Huntington, West Virginia, the little girl, got out, managed to get out of the car and get away from the filthy, pervy old man. The best part of this story is that neither of the two children were physically injured. I have a feeling they're going to have some emotional trauma out of this. William J. Morrison III has been charged with kidnapping. 2 counts. And with the assistance of the public, the Huntington Police Department found Morrison and searched his residence and another apartment in Barbersville, West Virginia, not far from Huntington. He is at present being held without bail. Now, here's the via the Buckeye State part.
William J. Morrison III is the former superintendent of the Hamilton Local School District just south of Columbus, Ohio. Anybody want to bet how he votes? It was 2017 when he got popped for a misdemeanor drug charge of possession of crack cocaine by the Columbus PD. They found it in his car. The Hamilton local school district then fired him. And I guess he went to live in Huntington. Not that long a drive. I took that drive a few weeks back. About 4 hours. Maybe he had people in West Virginia. I don't know. But there we are. There we are again. Republicans constantly bark and grunt and hoot and squeal and scream and moan and pontificate about the groomers. And it's their reason for despising people like me. And all the while, the William J. Morrisons of the thirds, are driving around the roads of American cities, trying to lure little girls back to their home, and little boys. You will not hear this story, not that you ever go there, but this story will not show up on Newsmuck. It will not show up on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Testicle-toasting Tucker Carlson will not feature it broadly upon his evening racist cast. Because, of course, William J. Morrison III is white. Unless, of course, Tucky can work up some angle to claim that the liberals made that happen. Because, well, they're not interested in facts. They're interested in the will to power. And the accession to power. And the exercise of power. And bigotry. Hate and eliminationism. Oh, you're more than welcome, Haley. Haley says, thank you, Robin, for boldly speaking out tonight. Sometimes it has to be said. Sometimes it becomes unavoidable. And when I read that line from The Intercept about complicit liberals, I was reminded of a letter from Birmingham Jail where Dr. King said, my biggest problem isn't the Klan. My biggest problem is the well-meaning centrists who say, yeah, we agree, but wait. It's the same thing. So, I think I'm going to knock off early this evening. I'm kind of exhausted. And, I think I'm just going to relax and wait for President Biden's speech to come on and take notes and, oh, I don't know, maybe tweet a little bit. Lady B responding in regard to the Jackson
water crisis, says, so wait, there's nothing we as a country can do? Oh, my God. Dudette, we're killing our own citizens. Yes, and have been. Because in order to not kill our own citizens, we have to want to not kill our own citizens. And people like Colonel Governor Tate Reeves, the governor of Mizzoupistan. Well, frankly, my dear, he doesn't give a damn. Because fixing a failed water system for 180,000 people isn't going to do him any political good. Because he just assumes that that's pretty much 180,000, but something less than 180,000. That's a bunch of people that weren't going to vote for him in the first place. And in the mindset of a Colonel Governor Tate Reeves, well, he'll palm it off on Chokwe Lumumba, Mayor Lumumba. Because that kind of shit always works in a place like Mississippi, Stan. Oh, hell yes, it does. So thanks, everybody. Thanks so much, Max, for answering two-thirds of today's challenge. If anybody wants to answer that last $100, we will actually be able to double it all thanks to the sponsors of Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. That's Chris in Germany and Ralph's and an anonymous friend. It would be great. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And like I said, I imagine we will be talking about the degree to which President Biden called out this latest, most ugly spasm in American politics. Oh, a note from Jack in Shreveport. School loan forgiveness unfairness. Why all the talk about unfairness on the school loan forgiveness issue? It's because it was made an issue by the right wing. The Heritage Foundation was touting it some time ago. I saw one of the higher-ups raving about it and anything else they could think of to kill the issue. Trying to look up the specific program I saw brought up way more hits than I could deal with, but I think the person was on in May. Well, it doesn't benefit them. You know, they're messaging and they're tweeting, Jack, about how, oh, you know, you're going to be paying for the student loans of Harvard lawyers. Horseshit. The vast bulk of these loans go to people making less than $100,000 and in most cases less than $70,000. But as always, the people who message this filth count on one thing that they know is an absolute certainty, as sure as the sun will rise in the east in the morning, and that is that the people that they need to enrage are not in the least bit interested with having their biases challenged. They want their biases confirmed. They want somebody to tell them that Joe Biden's getting something and the Democrats are getting it over on them and they work so hard. That's why. And then, you know, that money that's going to student loan forgiveness, they want it. They'd like to have them another tasty little $1.5 trillion tax cut. Remember, point 12 of Skeletor Scott's 12-point contract on America is to cut taxes for his buddies. Makes sense, doesn't it? Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose.
Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky. And hey, there's Skeeve. Skeeve! Good to see you this evening. Thank you so much. Really good group in the chat room this evening. Hey, there's Matt in San Francisco. Hey, Matt. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new, fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Tara and I are having a blast this week. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. There would be no ACAC, no HR 2073 without Coal River Mountain Watch and without the ACE campaign, a campaign of Coal River Mountain Watch. Please help us see it passed out of the House. Reach out to your member of the House of Representatives. Ask him to co-sponsor HR 2073. It means the world to Appalachia. Please stay safe. I think the BA 4.5 booster will be on the way fairly soon. And as quick as I can get it, I will. Please wear your mask, especially anywhere you might be around maggots. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance. 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, you know, if you're going down the street and some 59-year-old skeevy-looking dude pulls up and says, "Hey, you want to babysit my kid?" Avoid that groomer like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.